Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, as I thought, as I said all last week, we'd most likely see a stronger gold on Monday, as we are seeing today, currently at 1215 up 990. It was actually much higher earlier in the day. We had a high of 1219, but right now $1,215 up 990. Silver had a little pressure on it, was higher, down 0.02 at 1605. You have the platinum up 980. Palladium up 5 at $550. The USDX today, little pressure on that. It reversed itself. It's now up 0.16 at 95.85. Crude oil down 0.40. That's crude oil down 0.40 at 48.93. 48.93. Paper markets today. Dow reversed itself a little bit. It was down triple digits. Now down 87. 87 at 17,786. The NASDAQ was up 14 at 49.83. The S&P was down 2 at 2,097. 10-year yield down to 0.02, 183%. And the euro, 111, down 0.08. There you go, Al.
And does that mean that now it's my turn to try to think of something intelligent, insightful, and interesting to say? Is that what we're doing?
No. Oh, okay. I want to report today, I will say, Americans are from the government, Commerce Department, information that was released today. I guess consumers are spending rose 1% in April compared to March. Americans are buying bigger ticket items like refrigerators, roofs, cars, and televisions. Spending on those pricey goods rose 2.2% in April, and cars accounted for the majority of the increase. You know, there's several different reports and stats that follow consumer confidence, and one was released, and I was following it, and they do vary. But this one out of University of Michigan. This is Consumer Spending Index. They show that it shot up nearly 95% in May from 89% in April. American car dealers, they sold a record amount of sedans and minivans last year. Then we sort of saw auto sales flatten out in the beginning of the year. But Americans bought a healthy 7.8 million cars, up from 16.9 million cars in from March. So Americans are buying cars in April. Must be from all those tax refunds that they've received.
That's probably what it is, Melody.
You think so? Well, you know, yeah, they barely
got so much
have to
money
put any
back from the government. They should refund your money every month if they want to stimulate the economy.
Well, they might have to here shortly. Home Depot, they reported stronger earnings backed by shoppers that are buying appliances, dishwashers, dryers, stoves. Items that cost over $900 at Home Depot rose 9.5%. And not bad considering the first quarter, the economy only grew 0.8%. So, well, anyway, they're expecting the growth to be stronger for the second quarter. So we'll have to see if any of these numbers actually do show a major pickup in the economy. But we all know that auto loans, I mean, is 0% financing. Again, we're back to subprime. We're back to, you know, the risk of loans. There's, you know, not 5-year loans anymore, but there's 6 and 7 year loans. And a lot of people are leasing. And so that keeps your payments lower. There's a lot of discussions that home prices across the U.S. rose sharply in early spring due to rising demand and supply constraints. And it shows that the whole housing market recovery of the past 5 years is gaining strength. But just last week, I reported on Wells Fargo, 3% down. Your FICO score can be 620. Then those loans are going to be sold to Fannie Mae. So again, the government is taking the risk. The taxpayers are taking the risk for keeping the housing market flowing. They need it. So they're going to be giving houses, again, subprime. And we saw what happened in 2008. It's just another,
another leaf in the breeze that tells you that we're seeing some evidence of some sort of a recovery in the housing market, for example, and in the sale of automobiles. And on the face of it, people can sit back and say, hooray, right? Good news is good news. But you look a little deeper and you realize that nothing's really changed and the fundamentals are still strained, and it does not, you know, it's not apparent that we're going to see a happy ending on this, at least not in the immediate future. An article here from ZeroHedge.com, and the headline is, Former Morgan Stanley Chief Asia Economist, Don't Listen to the Ruling Elite, The World Economy is in Real Trouble. Andy G, I don't know how you pronounce his last name. It's X-I-E. I'm going to say G. The former Morgan Stanley chief Asia-Pacific economist says the world's elite that are attending the G7, G20, Davos, and other wasteful meetings are wrong in trying to pin the blame for economic turmoil on the people's psychology. All signs point to a prolonged period of global stagnation and instability. The recent G20 working group meeting in Shanghai didn't come up with any constructive proposals for revising the global economy, its first point, which indicates what? They don't have any. They don't know how to make it jump again, right? They can wish, they can hope, they can do that, but they are out of Schlitz. The technology and the strategies and the tactics and the theories that they've relied on for decades are apparently no longer functioning accurately. And they are complaining that the recent market turmoil didn't reflect underlying fundamentals in the global economy. Well, I beg to differ. We've got this G20 working group and economists say, hey, it doesn't reflect underlying fundamentals. I think, yeah, it does. We have some serious problems in this world. Again, I don't know how anyone can say that the economy doesn't reflect underlying fundamentals when we have something like the basalt index, which indicates that the, or Baltic index, excuse me, that indicates that the amount of traffic, cargo carried by ships has declined on that index from 12,000 a couple of years ago to less than 500 today. That indicates global economy has collapsed. Where's the fundamental to refute that the Baltic Dry Index? what else? They point out the oil price has declined by 70% since 2014. The Brazilian real has reduced its value by half. Russian ruble is down 60%. The global economy is on the cusp of another recession. And these important people, meaning the ones at the G20 meeting in Shanghai, they blamed it all on some sort of psychological problems of the people. This is fascinating to me. We've got these geniuses going to the G20 meeting and say, well, there's something wrong with all these crazy people because they're not taking orders from us. They're not doing what we expect them to do. They're not doing what we predict they'll do. They're not doing what we're telling them to do. So there must be something wrong with the people. They're having some kind of a psychological problem. There's nothing wrong with our theories. There's something wrong with the people, and that's what they're essentially arguing, or at least the economist Andy G, that's what he's apparently arguing. Over the past two decades, the world has gone from one crisis to another. People are complaining everywhere. This is due to mismanagement by the very people who attend the G20 meetings, the Davos boondoggle, and so many other global meetings that waste taxpayers' money and put inept leaders in the limelight. One major complaint that people have is that the system is rigged. All right, and I agree with that 100%. That is, the rising income concentration among the wealthy is not due to free market competition, but a rigged system that favors the politically powerful. Right. And I agree with that 100%. We have a political system that's rigged in this country, that's rigged around the world, and people are aware of it and they don't like it. And as a result, they are withdrawing their confidence, they're withdrawing their support. And the economists are saying, what's wrong? You people out there in radio land need to believe us and do as we say. And we're saying, no, you need to believe us and do as we say. And one of the things we say is you need to obey the people's law, not the government's law, the people's law, which is the Constitution. You got to start paying attention. The government says, oh, forget that. We don't have to obey the Constitution. We're the government. That's for little people. the rigged system, their complaint, the most important factor in the rigged system is monetary policy being used to pump up financial markets in the name of stimulating growth for the people's benefit. That's what they tell you. They say, we gave all that money to the Wall Street banks to help you, the little people. Well, it didn't really help any of us very much. It may help the banks a great deal, but it remains to be seen that it's provided much benefit for the public. In fact, according to this article, the wealth effect has stayed within a small circle of the wealthy. And these people show up at Davos to congratulate policymakers on their successes. But they don't hear from ordinary people, and if they do, they don't pay attention to them. They don't have anything for ordinary people. Wasting resources is an equally important factor in making the global economy weak and prone to crisis. After the 2008 financial crisis, the U.S. government and Federal Reserve spent trillions of dollars to bail out the people who created the crisis. Instead of facing bankruptcy and jail, these people become richer than ever. Predictably, they have used their resources to rig the system further. How do they use their resources? How do the wealthy use their wealth to rig the system further? They use it to bribe congressmen, senators, and even presidents. They give them what they call political campaign contributions, but are nothing more, in fact, than bribes. to support particular items of legislation, which the wealthy may draw up on their own, just hand it to congressmen. Says, here's a check, and here is a bill we want enacted. And the congressman cashes the check and goes ahead and enacts the bill. They don't even necessarily read the bill. They don't legislate in Congress. They broker laws. Legislation is where you sit down and you talk about it. You say, okay, I think we should do this. Somebody else says, no, it should be that. Somebody else says they have a third alternative. You sit there and you work until you can reach an agreement that satisfies everyone, or if you can't reach an agreement, you forget it. Wait for another time. But they're not even reading the legislation, and it has been widely and routinely admitted that people in Congress, they admit, we don't read the laws we pass. How do they know what the laws say? And why should you and I be subject to laws that they merely broker rather than read? The Supreme Court has ruled time and again that the essence of a law is congressional intent. If they run into segments of the law that are unclear, all right, they're ambiguous. It might mean A, it might mean B. How do they decide what the law really means? They go back into the notes and records and that were recorded while people were debating what the law should mean. And they look to see, what do these guys really mean when they wrote this down? They look for congressional intent. Where is the congressional intent when Congress doesn't read the laws it votes for or against? There is no congressional intent. Their intent is to make a fast buck. And people understand this, and they are becoming increasingly angry about it, and it's not just in this country, it's around the world. This article says political instability will spread around the world. Initially, populists will win. Their policies, unfortunately, will focus on protectionism and rolling back the World Trade Organization system. I don't agree with the author in this regard. I think restoring protectionism is probably a good thing. Rolling back the World Trade Organization system, I believe it's probably a good thing. It certainly hasn't helped ordinary Americans. It might be great for multinational corporations, but it's not good for ordinary Americans. The article goes on. It says, the world is on the cusp of a prolonged period of stagnation and instability. Our ruling elite is blaming it on the people seeing things. And they might be right. But are we seeing illusions, or are we starting to see the truth? And he goes on and says their strategy, meaning the rich and the powerful, their strategy is to change people's psychology. They want us to all sit back and sing Kumbaya and happy days are here again. And they will probably succeed in getting some of us to do that. But the truth of the matter is that thanks to the internet, more than perhaps anything else, people are educating themselves. They are beginning to see things all right. And what they're beginning to see is the truth. And they're beginning to realize, oh my gosh, there is something wrong with a fiat monetary system. This country has gone into great and deep trouble and danger ever since we decided that we don't need gold and silver coin to back our dollars. Instead, all we need to do is put out these paper debt instruments, which are backed by nothing but promises. Promises. That's all debt is, a promise to pay. Your debt-based monetary system is backed by nothing but government and Federal Reserve promises, and the promises can't be kept. And that means sooner or later the currency is going to turn out to be worthless, as will a lot of the paper debt instruments that are denominated in dollars. People are beginning to see this, and as they do, they lose confidence in the system. The economists don't know what to do. They can't con an honest and educated man. And people are gaining honesty, they're gaining the education, they're gaining some integrity, and they're beginning to say, wait a second, this is not a good system. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We have a little silver special today. We have 90% silver, $28 face value. That gives you about 20 ounces of silver. We're going to have 20 Silver Morgan dollars. These are circulated. These are prior to 1921. So a lot of the dates on these will be prior to 1900. They're very nice looking circulated Morgan silver dollars. And of course, 20 of the new 2016 American Silver Eagles. So you receive 20 Morgan silver dollars, 20 1 ounce silver eagles, and $28 face value of 90% silver. This includes all your shipping costs for $1,259. That's $1,259. 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com. We did not send out a newsletter this week, with it being Memorial Day. So make sure you sign up. You'll receive your first one next Monday. All you have to do is go to the website. There's a mailbox there. Sign up. And, of course, our radio programs are archived there also at the website.
Got an article. We just read from an article that, again, at ZeroHedge.com, former Morgan Stanley chief in the chief of Asia, the Economist, don't listen to the ruling elite. The world is in real trouble.
Well, let me,
it's evidence. Go ahead.
I just want to make a quick comment on that also. On Thursday, I talked about the Prime Minister of Japan. I don't think any of us would ever hear what truly went on behind the closed doors on any of these meetings. But, you know, what's released is exactly right, what they want the people to hear and think. But even the Prime Minister of Japan, he came out and he says there's a big risk.
Yeah.
And he's looking for a, you know, some sort of a coordinated fiscal stimulus, you know, by the G7 members.
But they can't. How do they coordinate it?
But that's, well, again, behind closed doors, who knows? However, the point is he's coming out and he's talking about the world's economy, how grim it really is, and that this, the second economic crisis is just around the corner.
Well, I agree with him. And the point behind this is we're seeing people in positions of authority and insider knowledge that are saying, hey, this thing is getting ready to hit the fan. And it's not unreasonable for us, even though we see that we had a good month or two for selling automobiles, we've had a good month or two for selling houses, just the same. There is trouble on the horizon, and the horizon is not years away. That horizon is fairly close. You mentioned that they needed some coordination among G7 nations to deal with this economic problem. But the problem, one of the problems they've got is no coordination is possible. And the reason is that we have a U.S. dollar index where the dollar is deemed to be the equivalent of gold, or at least it was back a couple of decades ago. And everything else is relative to the dollar. The price of the purchasing power of the euro is calculated in terms of its relationship to the dollar. And the purchasing power of the yen is calculated in terms of its relationship to the dollar. And the dollar, likewise, is not set. There's no objective value to the dollar. That thing is also moving like a rubber band that's constantly stretching and contracting in relation to the other currencies, six of them that comprise the foreign currencies other than the dollar and the U.S. dollar index. The problem we've got is the other currencies want inflation. In fact, all of the governments apparently want inflation because inflation allows people to borrow more money and pay it off in cheaper dollars. Inflation allows borrowers and consumers to essentially rob their creditors. They borrow $100,000, and we have 10% inflation, and when they pay back the creditors actually get $90,000. All right? They get $100,000 nominal, but because of 10% inflation, they're getting only $90,000 in purchasing power. Inflation is a way to rob creditors. That is to say, the people who have actually worked for a living, produced more than they've consumed, saved the difference between what they've consumed and what they've earned, and these are the creditors. These are the people who should be rewarded. Instead, they're being robbed by this system. And inflation is one of the mechanisms they use to rob the creditors. Now, the problem in our brave new Keynesian economic world, everyone understands that inflation will, everyone seems to believe that inflation will stimulate our various economies. But when we have the U.S. dollar index, where the dollar is on one end of this teeter-totter and the other six currencies are on the other end, when one side of that teeter-totter goes up, the other side must go down. When the dollar increases in purchasing power, that is to say it deflates, the other six currencies on the other side must, on average, lose purchasing power, and they will inflate. Now, they want that. They're sitting there, yay, we need inflation to stimulate our economy. But if they get inflation, we get deflation. What's good for them is bad for us. Likewise, if we get inflation, they're going to suffer deflation, and it's going to be bad for their economies. And so when we talk about having some sort of a coordinated attack, I don't see how that on the economic problems the world faces, I don't see how that's possible as long as the dollar is the fundamental criteria that we're using to measure the purchasing power of other currencies. As long as we have this teeter-totter relationship, this adversarial relationship, six currencies on one end, dollar on the other end of the teeter-totter, as long as that relationship is adversarial, we can't all have inflation at the same time. the only way we can get back where we can inflate the dollar and inflate the other currencies simultaneously, and I'm not recommending that, but that's what they seem to want, and they would probably all agree to it. The only way we can do it, we have to get something else to tie the purchasing power to besides dollars. We've got to get the dollar on the same end of the teeter-totter as the other six currencies, and we need something on the end where the dollar used to sit. And what could that be, Melody?
Gee, let me think, Al.
Might be gold.
Might be.
Yeah. But as long as we've got the dollar on one end and these other currencies on the other end of the teeter-totter, they're working against each other. One goes up, the other goes down. They can't all go up at the same time. And therefore, when the Japanese premier says we need some sort of a coordinated attack on these economic problems, I think he's whistling in the dark. There isn't going to be one. So, and if there's not going to be,
well, I think
that's
he
just
knows
more evidence that this thing just isn't going to be resolved until it collapses.
Well, my
when
idea.
When it collapses, then they will do something dramatic that they won't do now. They may know about it already, but they won't do it until everything is burning, and then they'll say, oh, wait, I got an idea.
And that might just be their coordinated effort, but with the way I look at it, the Prime Minister of Japan is probably out of bullets, and he knows it.
Yeah.
And this is a way to sort of shift the blame to his people. If, you know, it doesn't work and things start to fall apart over there, you know, he can at least say he cried for international help and he was ignored or something. But certainly I think he understands. I mean, he's placed, what, 2 trillion yen into their system. And what has it gotten them? Negative rates. So,
got another article here from Natural News. And it goes along these lines to some degree. It says, Fox News poll, this is the headline, Fox News poll. Americans believe the world is going to hell in a handbasket. Huh. And then many realize Obama administration is lying to them. The Obama administration is lying? Melody, how could that be? This is the most open administration in American history. So why would they be lying to us? That's just shocking, Melody. I'm shocked, I tell you. According to a poll by Fox News, a majority, 58% of voters believe the world is simply going to hell in a handbasket. And that figure is bipartisan. 48% of Democrats feel that way, as do 61% of independents and 71% of Republicans. Just 35% think that everything will work out and be okay, which is amazing to me. I'm pretty much astonished that one-third of Americans actually think that things are going well. What do you suppose those one-third are smoking? They must be welfare and subsidy recipients or government employees. One thing for sure, that one-third will be among the first to starve if the stuff hits the fan, because they be dumb. Meanwhile, by a 61 to 36% margin, voters say they don't feel hopeful about the direction of the country. Again, one-third of Americans, actually a little more than one-third, 36%, but one-third of Americans are hopeful. Maybe they're getting a little too much fluoride in their drinking water, but I don't see. I mean, I'm not advocating that people should be doom and gloom per se, but you have to be objective, right? There appears to be trouble coming, and I don't think it's going to be resolved by maintaining some sort of a smiley face. We've got to actually take a look at what's happening and prepare ourselves for it. And they're talking about, meanwhile, we've got a 61-36% margin. Voters say they don't feel hopeful about the direction of this country. They go on and they say that's a reversal from 2012, 4 years ago, when 57% felt hopeful. 4 years ago, 57% felt hopeful. Today, 61% don't feel hopeful.
That was the Obama.
Uh-huh.
Everybody thought Obama. Everybody was hopeful of Obama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hope and change you can believe in. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, we got our change, all right. The shift is driven by a nearly 30-point drop among Democrats. Democrats have lost 30% of their previous optimism has waned during the Obama administration. This is perhaps something similar to if you took a poll in Venezuela right now and say, well, how do you people like socialism? Mm-hmm. And compare it to the poll they took 4 or 5 years ago. How do you people like socialism? I'll bet there's a bunch of people who used to love socialism and are now having second thoughts. Just as there are a bunch of Democrats who used to love the idea of socialism and or President Obama's administration, and they are also having second thoughts. 80% felt hopeful 2 years ago. Well, just 52% say the same thing now. That's among Democrats, fallen from 80% to 52%. 10% more respondents. That would be 49% versus 39%. Believe that America is worse off now than before Obama was elected in 2008. Despite all the negative sentiment toward the Obama administration, this is where it's also interesting. Everybody knows Obama screwed things up by the numerals, or virtually everyone knows that. And then it goes on and says in this article, despite all that negative sentiment toward Obama administration, the poll shows that Republicans have failed to make significant gains this election season, mostly because voters think they stink too. All right? All of this is evidence that the public is fed up with the system. We don't trust Congress, and not because we're irrational. This is first article that I was reading from. The wheelers and dealers think there's something wrong with public psychology. We're not looking at the fundamentals. What are the fundamentals under today's economy? Fundamentals is that most of the wealth should go to the top 0.1%. There's a fundamental for you, and they don't understand why the public can't get behind that. What's wrong with you people? Well, this is another one. The Republicans have failed to make significant gains this season because as bad as the Democrats are, nobody thinks the Republicans are any better, which explains why Bernie Sanders has been able to frustrate Hillary Clinton throughout the Democrat primary, and Donald Trump has defeated 16 other candidates a couple of months before the Republican National Convention. They're gone. I don't know that that's ever happened before. It is an indictment of the establishment. It's evidence that the public is fed up with the powers that be. We aren't buying any more of their stuff. And when they come down to sell us and try to say, look, we've got a brand new free lunch, and it's just for you because, boy, we really like you. A lot of us are saying, I don't want the free lunch. Take your free lunch and stick it. Now, I know a lot of people are dependent on those free lunches, and they're not going to give them up. But they're going to be out of them. They're going to run out of free lunches before this is all over. And some of the rest of us are saying, I don't want your free lunch. You understand? I can support myself. I don't need government meddling in my affairs. I don't need you to support me. I don't need you to regulate me. Go away. We do not need you. And we certainly don't believe that you are here to help us. The people from government are here to help themselves. They are not here to help the American people to any significant degree. Well, it's all part of the reason why you sit back and you look at these stories and you think to yourself, should I hang on to paper dollars or should I get some gold? Right? Well, one of the reasons you ask that question is because they tell you time and again, if you've looked into the nature of our fiat currency, that it all depends on public confidence. Where are we going to find the public confidence when more than half the people believe the country and the world is going to hell in a handbasket? Where are we going to find that confidence when we have Morgan Stanley executives or chief economists say, don't trust these elitists, they're lying to you? Where do we find that economy? And if we don't have that confidence, how much longer can the paper dollar hold together? And how long before price of gold goes up like a skyrocket? I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment with Melody Cedarstrom. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival. We've got a couple of articles on Democrat presumptive nominee Hillary Clinton. And the point behind these articles, they just broke out in the last day or two. The point to me is that the dam is breaking. All right. Hillary has been able to get away with a lot for a long time to where perhaps she thought she was the Teflon nominee. But the dam is beginning to break. Mainstream media is even beginning to turn on Hillary, and there's evidence that she is increasingly likely to be indicted by the FBI will apparently recommend she be indicted. Whether she is indicted or not remains to be seen, but if not, if she's not indicted, according to at least one source, and we'll get to that in a minute, the FBI will go public with this. If the Attorney General's office won't indict her, the FBI will say, okay, well, she's going to be indicted in the court of public opinion. What this reminds me of more than anything else is the political axiom that it's not the crime that gets you jailed. It's the cover-up that gets you jailed or thrown out of office, right? Hillary has been she's been involved in a lot of things that are controversial and offensive and perhaps even criminal. She's gotten away with it for years and operated on the apparent assumption that it's all old news and nobody cares anymore, but I think it's been stacking up like snow on a mountain peak. And just waiting for a moment, just piling up deeper and deeper and deeper until it all comes loose at the same point in an avalanche. And I think that's what's just about ready to happen to Hillary Clinton. Here's an article from Politico.com. State Department watchdog, Clinton violated email rules. All right, we've had a big debate going on about did she or did she not violate the email rules, and what are the consequences if those violations took place? Well, a State Department watchdog concluded that Hillary Clinton failed to comply with the agency's policies on records while using a personal email server that was not, and officials say would never have been, approved by agency officials. The long-awaited findings from the State Department Inspector General also revealed that Clinton revealed Clinton expressing reluctance about using an official email account. So it's not an accident. It's not an accident. She just happened to have a personal account set up. She didn't want to use the official account. The report detailed how some employees who questioned the wisdom of the homegrown setup were told to stop asking questions, and the audit confirmed apparent hacking attempts on the private server. Secretary Clinton should have preserved any federal records she created and received on her personal account by printing and filing those records with the related files in the office of the secretary. At a minimum, Secretary Clinton should have surrendered all email dealing with the department business before leaving government service. And because she did not do so, she did not comply with the department's policies that were implemented in accordance with the Federal Records Act. Now, all they're saying here is she didn't comply with government policies. They haven't expressly charged with violating the law. Nevertheless, that's what it works out to. The report also notes that she had an obligation to discuss her personal email account, but did not get permission from people who would have been needed to approve the technology, who said they would not have granted that permission if they'd been asked. The report represents the latest pushback, in this case by a nonpartisan government entity. They're talking about the Secretary of State and particularly the Inspector General. They claim that's nonpartisan. I don't know that I believe that, but that's their claim. The report represents the latest pushback against her campaign's claim that she did not break any rules and that her use of private server was completely allowed. The FBI is still probing into whether any laws were broken by putting classified information at risk, or whether her staff improperly sent sensitive information knowing it wasn't on a classified system. Clinton and her top staff did not cooperate with the investigation, which was requested by Secretary of State John Kerry. Now, it's interesting to me, the most important point is government is getting ready to charge Hillary Clinton, at least in relationship to the email, all right? That's the first point. I mean, she's in trouble. Second point is that this investigation by the Inspector General of the State Department was requested by the current Secretary of State, John Kerry. Now, that causes me to do some speculation that's at least interesting to me. It might not be true. It's conjectural, have no evidence to support it. But I wonder when this investigation of Hillary and the email problem began. I assume Secretary of State Kerry initiated the instigation based on a request by Barack Obama, or at least with Obama's approval. All right? There's a lot of people who think Obama will not approve Hillary being charged, indicted. That might not be true. If Kerry initiated this investigation, and if it's true that it was initiated with Barack's cooperation and approval, then it's probable that Barack is willing to indict Hillary. I wonder if Kerry initiated this investigation at a time when he was still considering a run for the presidency. I wonder if he hoped that the investigation might bump Hillary out of the running for Democratic Party's candidacy and open the path for himself to run or be nominated as the Democrat nominee. That's pure conjecture on my part. Don't know that it's true, but it's the kind of thing that you kind of expect. It's hard to look at what happens in Washington without whatever they're doing. I don't care what they're doing. How often can you look at it and say, oh, well, that's a good idea? They're moving with a benign intent. They're trying to help us, the people. When they do anything, it strikes me as at least probable that what they're doing is contrary to our interest. It's not to help us. It's not to help the people, not to protect our rights, our liberties, our freedoms, our prosperity, none of it. They're selling it all down the river. Clinton and her allies have contended she did nothing illegal by choosing to set up a private email server and account on her Chippewa, New York home, and that she was not trying to evade public records requests. Instead, Clinton said that she was motivated by the desire for convenience, though she conceded that it was not her best choice. Now, she's used this argument about convenience, and here, which brings up the next article. This is from the Conservative Tribune. And the headline is NBC turns on Hillary, exposes the real email secret she hopes never gets out. Insofar as NBC is helping to expose Hillary, not in a major way yet, but they are beginning to. This is more evidence to me that Hillary has finally crossed the line. The dam is breaking and the mainstream media is going to start to go after her. The article says in the past few days, Hillary Clinton's email scandal has made headlines all over the globe. The Daily Caller reported that several Democrats are finally seeing the light and are starting to question Clinton's email use in public. Even Democrats are abandoning, some of them, even some Democrats are abandoning Hillary's sinking ship. NBC's political director, Chuck Todd, even came out questioning her use of private email. Todd concluded that the only reason Hillary Clinton used a private server was to avoid federal laws. All right? He goes on and he says, convenience isn't it. Now, we just talked in the previous article where Hillary says she just did it for convenience. Set up her own service, it would be convenient. He says convenience isn't it because it's not a convenient thing to have a server in your home. No, it's making it so that it's outside the reach of the federal records law. He's saying that her private email server, the only way it makes sense is she wanted it outside the reach of the federal records law. He goes on, he says, you cannot look at it any other way. That's the only real logical reason to do it. And again, this is Chuck Todd, NBC's political director. Now, while this admission by Todd is nothing new, Republicans have been saying it for years, it's important that Democrats are finally starting to admit this in the open. The longer this email scandal goes on, the more damage it will do to Clinton in a general election, virtually ensuring that Donald Trump will win the White House. And that's one of the things, you know, they've dragged this on for a long time. They say it's not the crime, it's the cover-up that gets you convicted. This email scandal has been going on for a long time, and you have to ask yourself, has this been going on for a long time because it was a complex story that really took a long time to investigate? Has it been going on for a long time because Hillary Clinton used her political influence to slow or stop that investigation? Has it been going on for a long time because Republicans say we'll drag this thing out until we get right in the heart of the election season and then we'll turn it loose when it can have maximum impact on pushing voters from the Democrat side to the Republican side?
Do you know what I think, Al? I think this whole deal about her emails, the reason why it's coming to a head is because little old Bernie Sanders is having the time of his life, and he's gaining big time. And I think they're willing to drop Hillary. I think the Democrats are willing to drop Hillary only because Bernie Sanders is gaining speed. And I think if he hadn't gained speed, she'd still be their little politician to elect. And I don't think Trump can beat Sanders.
Well, I don't think Sanders is going to be the nominee. I think Sanders has succeeded because Hillary's been embarrassed, called to account to some degree in the media. People
know
she
was. If they indict her, the Democrats will drop her, and they will put Bernie in there.
I don't know if that's true. I think they should.
They will.
I don't know that they will. A lot of people.
I mean, he's neck and neck with her. I mean, well, who else would? Yeah, they wouldn't bring in somebody.
Biden.
They wouldn't bring in somebody.
Biden.
They wouldn't bring in Biden.
They've talked about bringing Biden.
If this was 6 months ago, then maybe they would have brought in Biden. And at this point in time, when Bernie is
catastrophic, the Democrats.
When Bernie is leading like he is, there's no way they would bring in anybody else. They would let him go with the flow.
I would say there's 60% probability that what you just said is correct. But there's a good chance that they would try to dump Bernie and get somebody else in there.
And it's too late.
Well, I don't know if it is or it's not.
It's too late. I think, because the people already are saying they want Bernie. He's neck and neck with Hillary.
I get that. But even if they get Bernie.
And it's all about the Democrats.
The whole Democrat Party has been tarred with the Clinton brush. All right? The Democrat Party, their number one candidate, is perhaps going to be indicted for one or more crimes.
And that's why they wouldn't bring in Biden, because he's an Obama fellow. They would bring somebody that would be like Bernie Sanders.
I don't think Sanders is going to be able to overcome that tarring from Hillary's brush. I don't think it's going to work for the Democrat Party. I think Trump is going to be elected, assuming, you know, barring some unforeseen extraordinary circumstances. I don't think the Democrats are going to be able to pull it off. They've got 8 years. Everybody despises Obama. Most people think that the country's worse off today than it was when Obama was elected. They're going to blame that on the Democrat Party. Bernie is going to have to come up with some extraordinary arguments that persuade the people that, look, we can more government handouts are the solution to our problem. I don't think Bernie can win. It might appear that way. You know, he may get some polls.
Not that I want him to win. I'm just saying.
Well, neither.
He would give Trump a run for his money.
I don't doubt. Maybe more than Hillary would.
Yep.
Hillary's being
discredited. At this point,
I don't know that she can be. I don't know that she can be revived. her candidacy is perhaps DOA. We're about out of time, folks. I want to thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Frank, the producer. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, always sunny.